My name is Shirley Stashko, and it is August the 21st, 2018. Today I'm in the dining room of Anne Stiles. Anne, could you please give us your full name?
My full name is Anna Alida Stiles.
And what was your maiden name?
Alberts.
What was your father's name?
My father's name was Albert Alberts.
And your mother's name?
My mother's name was Virginia Cusson Alberts.
And
that's your married name.
Right. And your spouse's name?
Leonard Stiles.
And what day were you born?
I was born on March the 16th, 1927.
And where were you born?
Right here in Athabasca.
Okay. So, Anne, you wanted to start out by telling us about your maternal grandparents.
Okay. My grandmother was from Quebec. And
could you give us your maternal grandparents' names?
Oh, my grandmother's name was Virginie, which is the French for Virginia. And her last name was Brewer.
And your grandfather's name?
And my grandfather's name was Adolphe Cusson.
Okay.
And my grandfather was from Connecticut. But he had ancestors who had come from Quebec. And there's a mystery about how they met. You aren't sure. There's two possibilities. My grandmother may have been one of the girls who went down to the New England states to work in the cotton mills. And they would stay with the nuns down there. And so she may have met him while she was working in the mill, because he was working in the mill as well. The other possibility is that my grandfather, who loved to roam around the country anyway, may have gone to Quebec to see where his ancestors had come from and met my grandmother there. And who knows? My sister and I later on went to Quebec to where they had come from and went over to the church there to get the records. They had a record of my grandmother's baptism and her confirmation, but they had no record of her marriage. Now, in those days, and being a fairly religious woman as my grandmother was, I'm sure they got married somewhere. So, if they didn't get married in Quebec, maybe they got married in Connecticut. Maybe he did come up there, and maybe he did meet her. And maybe they just eloped to Connecticut. From what I've heard about my grandmother, she was the type of person who might have done that. They moved through various parts of the New England states and ended up in New Bedford, Massachusetts. Now, at that time, the Union was being formed, and there were clashes between the Union and the cotton mills, which sometimes got quite violent. And the mill owners hired thugs to meet up with the Union people. And about that time, some of the missionaries from Alberta went down there trying to lure French Catholics to come up to take up homesteads in this part of the country. And my grandfather seemed very, very pleased with the idea of that. A little more wandering around, and it sounded good to him going up to a new country. So he and his two sons, Joe and John, came up in 1912, and they built a log house with a sod roof on it. If you don't know what a sod roof was, it was sod that came off the ground and was used on top of some strips of log that were put over as a roof. And when it rained, you got the full blast of it. My grandmother and her three daughters came the next year, in 1913. Now, just after they got there, they had one of the rainy spells, and my poor grandmother just sat and cried and wished she was back in New Bedford. She adjusted, but not completely, to life as a pioneer. My mother, however, was a great homesteader. She worked outdoors just like a man would, and she was small, but she was strong.
And how about your paternal grandparents?
My paternal grandparents' name was Alberts. I really don't remember I must have heard it at some point, but I don't remember what the first names were. They immigrated from Germany to Chicago when my father was 2 years old. And they stayed in Chicago from that time until my father was 12. And that, over those years, my father had quite an interesting time growing up there. In fact, he told stories about, one was about him one morning when he was going to school, and there was a man driving a horse-drawn rig down the street, and he saw someone jump out from the street and from the sidewalk and jump onto the back of that rig, and he shot that man. And I said to him when he told us that, "What did you do? Did you go to the police?" "Oh, no," he said. "You didn't go to the police over something like that, or you might be the next target." Everybody in the family had to be doing something to help bring in a little bit of revenue. And my father, being the youngest one, probably, I think he sold newspapers, but in the way of his work, he got a job that paid him a lot more than that. He could run and get buckets of beer for the brothel. And he said that the women in the brothel were very nice to him. When the weather was cold, they'd have him come in and warm up, and they were very motherly. He never told his mother that he was working there, because she would have made him quit. Now, when my father was 12, family moved to Illinois to a farm, and then bought a farm later on in South Dakota, and that was where my father spent the rest of his growing up years.
So then how did your father get to Alberta?
Well, he thought he wanted to see something. He didn't want a farm, for one thing, and if he stayed there, he knew he was going to be farming. And he wanted to see more of the world. So he decided to go wandering around. He went up into Saskatchewan for a while, and then went to Calgary, and then went to northern Alberta. And somewhere, while he was growing up in Chicago, he learned to be a carpenter. And that trade came in very well around Athabasca, because he worked building boats and building buildings as well. And then he was standing by the railroad tracks, watching the train come in from Athabasca one night.
In Collington?
In Collington. And this young woman came and got off the train. And my father said to the man he was standing with, "That's the girl I'm going to marry." The fellow said, "Oh, she has a sister that's even better looking." And he said, "I'm not interested in the sister. That's the one I want." So about that time, he got a job building a school just, about a mile south of where my grandparents lived. And he got acquainted with my grandparents. And then he got to know my mother when she was coming home from work. She was always home for the weekends. And they started going out together. And 6 weeks later, they were married.
That's pretty fast. So your father didn't want to be a farmer?
No.
So?
He did take up a homestead. You know, at that time, you could get 160 acres of land for $10. But you had to prove it up by having a certain amount cleared and some buildings built on it. So he didn't want to farm, but he did want to go moose hunting. So he found where there was some land available in really good moose hunting country. And then there he got his homestead.
Well, and was that also near Collington?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, it was a little south of where the school that I had gone to as a child. The school that he had built.
So he got his homestead.
So he got his homestead. But he had no intention of working it. He was just going to keep it until, as long as they would let him keep it. And he and my mother lived there for a very short time. And then they decided that they would go back to the United States. So they went down to the United States, and my father got carpenter work down there. And then there was a baby coming along. So my mother went and stayed with my father's sister and her husband while my father was working in Montana. And then later on, they moved up to, they and the baby, moved up to, back up to Alberta, and he got a job doing carpenter work in Stettler. I think it was on a bridge that he was building, helping build there. My mother decided that she would like to take a little trip home and show off her baby. So she got on the train with the baby, and when she got off in Collington, someone that she knew came up and said, "How did you find out so soon?" And she said, "Find out what?" And he said, "Oh, you didn't know. Your father died." So that was not a very nice thing to come home to. And the trouble was that that left no one to take care of my grandmother, because by that time, my Uncle John had a bad accident. He and his brother Joe were going somewhere across the field, and they had a gun, an old gun that somebody had sold them, lying on the floor of the wagon that they were driving. And my brother Joe was driving, my Uncle Joe was driving, and he saw a hawk, and a hawk had been getting some of my grandmother's chickens. So he said to John, hand me that gun. I'm going to stop the horses. And he said, hand me that gun. I'm going to shoot that thing.
Now, who's speaking?
Joe. And when John picked up the gun, it accidentally went off. Shot Joe. And they had to take him to Athabasca in the back of a wagon over rough roads. And 3 days later, he died. My Uncle John could not bear that. He was so terribly traumatized by it that he went back to the United States. My father bought my parents' farm. Even though he didn't like farming, somebody had to be there to take care of my grandmother. My parents had 4 children, Estelle, the one that was born in the United States, my brother Eddie, myself, and later on, when I was 12 years old, they adopted my brother Bob.
So, Anne, can you tell us some stories about growing up?
By the time I was born, my grandmother had died. But there was an elderly couple who lived just about a mile away, across a field from us. And they were like grandparents to me.
What was their name?
Their name was Doucette. Napoleon Doucette. Now, I don't know what her first name was, because, of course, you didn't call elderly people by their first name in those days. Mr. Doucette was a very outspoken sort of person. He grew his own tobacco. And his neighbors liked to come and visit him, and then they would bum some of his tobacco from him. So he found a way to deal with that. He took some poppy seeds and he mixed it in with the tobacco. And when they smoked it, they ended up going to sleep. So they quit asking him for tobacco. When he would go into town, he sort of enjoyed going and having a little drinking spree while he was all by himself there. And one time he had been in town stayed overnight. When he came home in the morning, he had an old table that he had bought at an auction. And he had that in the wagon. And so he told his wife that he had brought this as a present for her. She looked at the table and put her hands on it and said, "My old man, a table's a little like you today, a little bit shaky." Visiting Athabasca was always a treat to me as a child. It didn't happen very often because we lived 17 miles away, and of course you went by horse and whatever.
What do you mean, horse and whatever?
Well, a cutter or a wagon box or something like that. So it wasn't a ride that you took all that often. But I loved to go to Athabasca. Mostly, I liked to go and have a ride on the ferry, just for fun. But since I wasn't very old, my brother had to come along with me, which he did not like.
So can you tell us about the ferry?
There was no bridge across the river at Athabasca at that time. Not until long after. And they had a ferry that went across the river and back. In the wintertime, they had a cage which was pulled across the river by pulleys, and you were well up above the river. I never rode in that, and I don't think I would ever have wanted to. But I did like to ride on the ferry.
Did the ferry take horses? And
yes, they took horses.
And
yeah.
wagons
horses
and so on?
And, yeah. Yes, they did. It was quite big.
Okay. And did you have to pay?
No. No, it was free.
So, Anne, can you talk about some of your memories of what the town of Athabasca looked like when you were growing up? Some of the buildings and so on.
It was quite different than it is today. Some of the places that I remember was the old Imperial Bank of Commerce. And it was a very, very classic-looking building. It stood there up until the present bank was built many, many, many years later. The other thing that was they had around at that time was the creamery. Now, a creamery collected somebody's men went out with a truck or something and picked up cans of cream that the farmers had and brought them in, and then the creamery made butter out of them and sold the butter. Athabasca over the years had hospitals at four different sites. The first one, which I don't remember, it was, I never saw it. It was up the hill from the present Roman Catholic Church, and the nuns were running the hospital.
Is that the one that burned down?
Yes.
Right.
Yes, I think it burnt down fairly often, fairly early on, about 1920 or something. And then there was the hospital that I remember, where I had my tonsils out, where my sister had her appendix out, was at the corner of 49th Street and 49th Avenue. After that, they built another hospital just up the hill west of the Burger Bar. And then the present hospital, which is up in Cornwall. Another building that I remember quite well was Parker's store. It was a dry goods store. And people today probably don't know what a dry goods store was. They didn't sell any groceries or anything like that. They sold a few tools and clothing, that sort of thing. And the Parkers had the store, and they had an upstairs on that building, which they made into a hall for movies and dances.
What do you remember about the Union Hotel in those days?
Well, I never saw the old Union Hotel because that burnt down in 1912 or something.
Yeah.
And so I just saw the one that is there now. And I can remember that it was far grander than it is today. It had a big rotunda and with a lovely big stone fireplace in it. It was quite nice. And there was a very nice dining room with lovely linen tablecloths and napkins and all. So it was the place to go and eat.
Do you want to talk a little bit about going to school, going to a country school?
Mm-hmm. Okay. The school that I went to as a child was the one that my father had built just a mile away from home.
What was it called?
It was called Atlanta School. And that's where I took all my grades from 1 to 9. And then when I was ready for high school, my sister was working as a teacher. She had become a teacher, and she was teaching out near Vimy. And she said to my mother that if she could find a place that I could board in Vimy, I could come out and spend weekends with her and take my high school in Vimy. And that's what I did. I have very fond memories of being there. It was so nice to be on my own at 15 years of age.
Yeah, quite an adventure, yes. Really.
Yes, and weekends on Fridays, I would ride along with some kids that lived about halfway between Vimy and where my sister was teaching. I'd ride with them, and then I'd get off and walk the rest of the way to the school where my sister was teaching. She had a teacherage upstairs above the school, and the stairs creaked. And I remember one time she had gone somewhere, and I was alone there, and it was so spooky. I was so glad to see her come back. So after that, I went to Edmonton and finished up my high school there. And then I took teacher training at the normal school in Edmonton.
Tell people what normal school is.
Normal school was a teacher training school. It later became part of the university. But at that time, it was separate from the university.
And how long did you have to go in order to get your teaching certificate?
Well, this was wartime. The Second World War was on. And so there was a real teacher shortage because so many young men who had been teaching, and some of the women too, had joined up in the armed forces. So they wanted to get teachers out just as quickly as possible. And so you spent 8 months in normal school, and then you were a teacher. And I think the only thing I really learned about teaching at that time was how to keep the school register properly. The rest, you all had to pick up from experience.
So when did you begin teaching?
In 1945. And we got out of normal school early in May. And in that time, since there was such a teacher shortage, there had been in the smaller schools with a smaller registration, had been taking correspondence, and they had a correspondence supervisor.
Who wasn't a certified teacher.
He wasn't a teacher, no. Most of them were, you know, had their high school or part of it at least. And so I went to one of them, and it was a small registration, all right. There were only nine students, and only one of those was a boy. And that boy was Gene Kowalczyk. The school was called Grayville, and it was across the river from Athabasca and a few miles out.
Okay. And did you live in a teacherage there?
I lived in a little teacherage there, yes, which was just sort of a cabin. Had a bedroom and another room.
It was separate from the school?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you had to light a wood stove to keep warm?
In the teacherage, yes. But they had well, Jean was the janitor as well as a student.
Okay. So he would be in charge of
The school, keeping the school warm and clean. Yes.
So how'd you like being at Grayville?
It was lonely.
And you didn't have a car.
I didn't have a car. And I had to. There was a well beside the teacherage, but the water was no good in it anymore because it hadn't been cleaned out for years. So I had to walk a quarter of a mile to get a bucket of water from neighbors for drinking.
Do you remember what your salary was?
No, I remember it was pretty good wages for that time. But it was certainly a lot less than teachers get these days. But of course, I didn't have to go through all that schooling that they have to go through now. So I just stayed there just until July. And then the next year, I went to Winding Trail, which is out west of Baptiste Lake. And at first I rented a house that was close to the school, but it was cold and it was full of mice. Oh. In fact, one night when I was correcting some papers, I was sitting there and a mouse ran up my leg. So I wanted to get out of there. And I got permission from the school board to curtain off one corner of the school room. And that's where I lived for the rest of that year.
Without mice.
Without mice, yes. In fact, I had a cat to make sure that there were no mice.
So you're at Winding Trail for 1 year?
Yes, and then I went to Nesto, which is near Clyde.
And what was the name of that school?
And the name of that school was Allbush, which was a very, very descriptive name.
You were out in the bush?
It was out in the bush, yes. It wasn't very far from Nesto. You could walk it, and it was a mile and a half away. So I could walk down there to get groceries and see some people.
So isolated.
Yes. Yes.
So how long did you stay
there? I stayed there for 2 years. And then, toward the end of that second year, I had a friend who was teaching school up in Smith. And I went up to visit her. And there I met a very, very nice young man. And
so how did you meet him?
Well, my friend who was teaching up there wasn't really looking for a boyfriend because she was engaged to somebody here around Athabasca. But this young man had a movie projecting outfit. And so he would go from one place to another to show movies.
From one town to another?
One town to another, yes. And, but he was living in Smith.
So she introduced
him? Introduced him to me, yes. And we went out to a movie that he was showing out at Fawcett Lake. And so I went home for the summer holidays, but I couldn't get him off my mind. So I wrote him a letter. And lo and behold, within just about a week and a half, I had an answer back. And he told me later that he never answered a letter so fast in his life.
Aww.
And so the next year, in July of 1948, we were married.
And what was this person's name?
This person's name was Len Stiles.
So can you tell us a little bit about the movie business? How that worked?
Oh, well, it was always in a hall or a school, and you had a portable movie projector, and most places didn't have electricity at that time. So Lem had on the back of his car. It was a great big old Stutz car. And he had a little engine on there that produced electricity. And that's how we had the electricity for the movie.
Okay.
Excepting for, well, Slave Lake, I think, had electricity, so we didn't need it there.
But some of the smaller communities.
But some of the smaller communities like Jussard and places like that.
You needed that little generator.
Yeah.
Okay, but you would come home to sleep every night and then go out the next day to a different town.
Yes, yeah, in the evening, yeah. Mm-hmm. It was interesting. But it didn't bring in very much money, of course. So, my husband had his mechanics papers and he had his electrician's papers. And he got a job for Swanson Lumber Company at Chisholm. So then we moved to Chisholm. And
was that a good life?
It was a wonderful life. Chisholm was a little sawmill town, or planer mill town. It had been a sawmill town as well, but the sawmill had been shut down, and they just used the sawmills that were out in the bush. They were different. The lumber came from the mills that were out in the bush, came in, and then they planed it there. And during the war, it had been a very, very busy place. They had had both the sawmill and the planer mill, and they had a box factory where they actually made boxes, wooden boxes. Oh. And there had been quite a few more people than there were there by that time, but there was still enough people that it was quite a viable community. And it was a great place to live, especially for kids. They got turned out in the morning and called in for meals. But everybody kept an eye on them.
So how many children did you and Len have?
We had four children. We had Lynn, who sadly passed away with cancer when she was 44 years old. And then we had Ned, my only son, who is still around, and Joanne, who now lives out on Vancouver Island, and Laurel, who lives in Grand Cache. So they haven't stuck around home very well.
Ned lives in
Westlock. Yes.
So then after Chisholm, did you move away from Chisholm?
We moved to Smith. And we had a service garage a little ways outside of Smith. And that was a good place to live.
How long were you there?
Until 1973. And then we moved to Athabasca. Now, in the meantime, Len had added to his work as a mechanic by having a vending business. Machines that sold cigarettes and various other goodies, mm-hmm. and games. And he had those in several different places, including Athabasca.
You mean like pinball?
Yes, that type of thing, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So when you moved to Athabasca, that became his living?
Yes, yes.
So when you moved to Athabasca, did you move into the house that we're sitting in right now?
That's right, yes. We had this house built Bob Richards built this house for us.
And that was
1970. I've been here ever since.
1973.
Yeah.
And what did the neighborhood around here look like when you first moved here? Were all of these...
No.
Were there very many houses up here?
No, there sure weren't. There was one house right next to us. There was another house that got moved in on the other side of that one. There were two houses down on the edge of the hill as you're going down toward the town. And there was, just shortly after we were here, there was one house got built across on 54th Street. And that's all that was there.
So you were, it was almost like living in the country up here.
Yes. Where the kids' park is now was kind of marshy. And I remember the girls gathering some frog eggs
there. Oh.
But then once it started to get populated, it happened very fast. And in no time, it was all built up.
So, Anne, over the years, you've done a number of things besides being a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
At one point, you had a column in the local newspaper.
Yes, and when we first came to Athabasca, I had a hobby shop.
Oh.
And had that for, how long did I have that? Five years.
And where was that located?
That was located down on 49th Street. The building that the Vertigo now on 49th Street.
Athabasca Video?
Yes. Yeah.
And what did you sell in your hobby shop?
Oh, all sorts of hobby things. But I think the best seller was models for kids to build.
Oh.
And there was a whole flock of little boys from about 11 or 12 to about 15 that were really into the model business.
And I think for many years you wrote a column in the local newspaper.
Yes, I've always been interested in writing. I wrote a bit of poetry every once in a while and a few other things. And then the local paper was looking for somebody local to write a column. And at that time, I was a member of a writing group. And so we were approached to see if somebody wanted to do the column, and I thought that'd be a good idea. So I wrote for a couple of years. It was just for the paper in Athabasca. And then the Athabasca Advocate became part of the whole group that Town and Country is in. And so I started writing for Town and Country instead, and that because that went to, I think, four different places.
So how many years did you write?
I enjoyed it. I wrote for, I don't know, about 4 years or so. And then I was told that they were changing the format of the paper and there wasn't going to be room for my column anymore. And I found out later that that really wasn't true, that the format of the paper did not change in the least, and I had just been replaced by someone else. So I never knew the reason, never found out.
Well, what did you write about in your columns?
Everything. everything.
Was it politics?
It was some politics. Not nearly as much politics as I see in there now. There was stories of, you know, from older times, stories about things, and commented on things that were happening in the world at the present time, that sort of thing. Yeah, a little bit of everything.
Well, I know that your column was very much loved.
And I enjoyed doing it.
You're a good writer. And you're still writing letters to the editor.
Yes, I do.
You also had another little enterprise.
I did. Which I still do to a certain extent. When the university moved to Athabasca, it meant that there were a lot of people that were coming up here just for maybe 3 days, 2 or 3 days during the week. And but they lived mostly in Edmonton. And so they needed some place to stay during that time. So I started having a sort of bed and breakfast. They stayed in my house, and they had breakfast here. And the rest of the meals, they looked after themselves. And I really enjoyed that. I met so many interesting people that way. I still do rent out rooms. And mostly it's been from people from the university, but sometimes others as well.
And so you were a member of the local writers' club for a number of years, and you like to write poetry. And I think you've chosen a couple of poems that you'd like to recite for us now.
Yeah, these are some that are my favorites. Pretender. My space within the mirror was usurped by a staid woman with a time-worn face, crow's feet about the eyes, and a neck like poultry newly plucked. A body with such sagging rolls and folds as I could never own. When did she come? I'm sure she was not there when I looked yesterday. You, with your ravaged self and your propriety, you are not me, for I'm invulnerable to time. This is a poem in memory of my grandmother, who was a reluctant pioneer in 1912. What were your thoughts, Virginie, as you closed the door and looked one last time at the home where happiness dwelled? Did the tears flow as you boarded the train to the west, bidding a final adieu to the dear ones that you left behind? Riding a wagon through mire on the old homestead trail, were you stirred by the summer beauty you saw in this land? Or did your heart quake at the wilderness closing you in? What did you feel at the sight of your pioneer home? A little log cabin built by your husband and sons from the trees that they felled, tinked with the mud that in copious measure was found, roofed over with sod that once covered the soil at your feet. Was the joy of reunion sufficient to outweigh the pain as you thought of the home and the life that you left in the East? Did you hold firm, Virginie, as you saw the still form of your son in his young manhood struck down by a cruel twist of fate? Did you pray as your husband grew weak, overtaxing his strength? Did your heart break as you laid him his last to his rest, tired and sick and dependent on others for care? Where was the blame if your bitterness sometimes showed through? Rest, Virginie. Rest by the side of your love. Cold northern winds may blow o'er the fields where you lie, but your spirit has flown from this land where you never belonged, back to the city you loved by the great eastern sea.
All right. Well, Anne, it's been really enjoyable talking to you, and thank you very much for sharing all your memories with us.
Well, thank you for a very nice interview.